This is Dr. Allison Bailey, FACC, and Chair of the Cardiovascular Management Section Leadership Council at the American College of Cardiology. The CV Management Section is pleased to host the podcast series Practice Made Perfect, which will focus on non-clinical competencies related to leadership skills, professional identity, operational skills, and personal balance. We hope you'll join us every other week as we learn from experts in the field who will remind us that practice makes perfect.
Hello, I'd like to welcome our audience joining us for this podcast from the American College of Cardiology Practice Makes Perfect series. My name is Evan Ownby. I'm an early career interventional cardiologist practicing in Lynchburg, Virginia with the Strubance Cardiovascular Center with Centra Health, and I'll be the moderator today. Our discussants today come from different backgrounds, but both bring a wealth of knowledge on our topic today, population health. First, we have Mr. Timothy Atterbury. Tim currently serves as the CEO of the American College of Cardiology, having taken that helm just over 1 year ago. Nearly 30 years of experience in cardiovascular service line management, most recently serving for 5 years as president and CEO of Ballad Health Holston Valley Medical Center in Kingsport, Tennessee. Joining Tim is Tom Maddox. Dr. Maddox is a practicing cardiologist, currently a professor of medicine at the Washington University School of Medicine. He is the inaugural executive director of the Healthcare Innovation Lab at BJC Healthcare, a 15-hospital healthcare system associated with WashU that includes both Barnes Jewish Hospital and St. Louis Children's Hospital. This organization develops innovative ways to deliver care and improve health of both individuals and communities. Tim and Tom, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, as I said, our topic today is population health, and we have a wide audience for these podcasts. So let's start by defining briefly our topic. Tom, why don't you take this one?
Sure. So population health, at least as I define it and others have as well, is defined as the health outcomes of a group of individuals, including the distribution of those outcomes within the group. So groups can be geographic groups, so an entire nation or a community or a state. But it could be groups defined by other attributes, such as employees of a certain company, maybe an ethnic or racial group, group of disabled persons, prisoners, gender, any other defined group that you can think of. And the idea is that population health methods look at the health outcomes of those groups and then put that information in front of folks that could help improve the health of those groups. So it may be that the answer is put it in front of healthcare practitioners that could work with that group, or put it in front of community leaders if there's a community-level intervention that could be helpful, or put it in front of state lawmakers if there's a policy that may be beneficial. So I think that's generally how we define it. And it's also important to say that it's not just the overall health of that particular group, but it's the distribution of health within that group. I think a good example is if you look at the average health of the United States, you would see that that average doesn't necessarily mean that everybody has that degree of health. And in fact, there's wide variations in the degree of health care and health outcomes that different groups and populations within the country experience. So it's important that when we do these kinds of analyses or think about this approach to medicine, that we sort of understand not only what is the group we're interested in, but what is the distribution of health outcomes within that group.
Great. That's a perfect overview. I guess from a service line management, Tim, what would you add to that, particularly with respect to the quadruple aim?
Sure. And as Tom, I think, described, this is a broad topic. And in many ways, those of us who've been around healthcare a while were not used to thinking about healthcare management in terms of this population health approach, even though I think the outcome of this is better health and actually probably lower cost overall. So I think the quadruple aim, this goal of having higher quality, a better patient experience, lower cost, and happier clinicians probably lies inside of this future environment where we actually are taking on responsibility of managing population. And I would just put an S at the end of that population because, as Tom mentioned, there are different subgroups or segments of population that are involved here. So I would just offer that cardiovascular disease definitely is going to be in what I would call the bullseye of population health because so many patients with chronic conditions or comorbid conditions also have an underlying cardiovascular condition that the cardiovascular specialists are really in a great position to lead this migration toward population health and away from episodic and focus on individual episodes of care. So I think the goal here is to look at your role as a clinician and the CV service line and the administration of that service line differently. We're not dealing with the fragmentation. We start thinking about the continuity and the coordination of care, the patient navigation, how we co-manage with other physicians, with other hospitals or other health systems. And as Tom also mentioned, one of the things that I personally have become much more aware of are the social determinants of health, that the health status of populations sometimes depends less upon the quality of the health care that's available to that population and more on the social and economic determinants surrounding that population. So if our goal is good health of a population or a segment of population, sometimes we have to look at social and economic and community issues, non-clinical issues, that it may be more important toward achieving a good health outcome for that population. And then in terms of kind of the overall quadruple aim, cost control and efficiency and reducing cost is one of those four aims. And I think when we think about population health, we really need to start thinking about a comprehensive effort by all of us to remove avoidable costs and avoidable events and unnecessary hospitalizations so that we can redirect the limited healthcare dollars we have to spend toward other programs and other interventions that can make an even bigger impact on the overall health of any population.
Great. Yeah. You know, I can say as a clinician, it's not that I don't focus on the issues of population health, but sometimes we can become very pigeonholed in what we are looking at. And when we want to achieve better outcomes, we want to lower costs, we want to improve the patient experience and certainly improve the experience as a clinician, we can lose sight of the broader aims and how all these things play together. I wonder if it might be helpful just to present a clinical scenario for the clinicians out there, a very typical one. I was just on the consultative service last week, and see how we can look through that clinical scenario with more of a lens of population health. So I saw one young gentleman, 45 years old, a Hispanic male, English as his second language. He had been out of work for the past 2 months because of increased shortness of breath, came into the hospital, and we were consulted due to his increased shortness of breath. An echocardiogram demonstrated new LV dysfunction. Troponin biomarker was assessed, and that was elevated. Upon evaluating this, then we made the decision based upon his symptoms. We found that he was a newly diagnosed diabetic. He was hypertensive and not on appropriate medications for these. But we made the decision to proceed with coronary angiogram to define his anatomy, and he found him to have a new right coronary artery lesion that underwent percutaneous coronary intervention, and everything went very smoothly. He was seen by several different services, including diabetes education, and we felt clinically that we'd made a lot of headway. We had planned a follow-up for him within the week in one of the clinics that we've established, a home-to-office clinic that we hear about a lot, and this creates a scenario in which we can feel very satisfied in the clinical service that we provide, yet we may be missing some factors and may be able to look at this from a different lens to consider the social ramifications and the environmental ramifications that affect this patient that we may not consider. So I guess I'd open that up to you, too, and see what you might be able to provide from a population health standpoint.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty typical example of the kind of patients that cardiovascular clinicians see often every day. And when I think about it in the context of population health, I think our overall goal, regardless of where you are in contributing to the healthcare community, is your goal is to optimize health for this gentleman. And so what we've learned from the sort of framework of population health is you need to think about all the various inputs that go into, in this case, this gentleman's health outcome. And I would say that's not just healthcare. In fact, a minority of what's going to dictate his health outcomes is going to be the healthcare he receives. It's an important piece for sure, but we also have to think about what is his individual behavior around risk factors or medication adherence or other things related to his health. What are his genetic predispositions to his heart failure, his diabetes? What's the social environment in which he lives? His work and family and living situation, and the physical environment that he may be exposed to. So when you start to sort of think very globally on a population level of the various inputs that go into his health, Sure. What it does is it sort of orients you to maybe expanding your exploration of this gentleman's life and then linking it to things that need to be done to optimize his health. So just to be specific, obviously, Evan rolls out a lot of clinical conditions, and I think all the clinicians listening to this scenario would say, oh, well, he needs secondary prevention for coronary disease, he needs evidence-based guideline therapies for heart failure, and he needs diabetic control. And I think all that's right. But there's more to that with healthcare. We need to think about, once he's discharged, what's his follow-up? Is that easy to get to? Does he have the right supports from an allied care team? Who's his pharmacist? Are they going to be able to guide him through what are arguably new and side effect-laden medications? And then you have to go upstream even a little bit further. So he's, as you said, a Hispanic male, been out of work. Did he lose his job? What is his job? Does he have insurance? What does all that mean for his health? And if things are suboptimal there, are there things we as clinicians can do to try and help him, both individually, but if we find that this happens a lot, that a lot of people are without safety net health insurance if they have to temporarily stop working due to a health condition, is that something as a community we need to think about in conjunction with our policymakers about, can we do a better job with this? Or if he is exposed in his work, let's say he's a factory worker and exposed to a lot of air pollution, which we know would worsen these conditions, do we need to start thinking about, with our occupational health colleagues and community members and industry partners, about better ways to clean up that environment to help him and folks like him who are exposed to that and it's harming their health? So I think the more you unpack it, there's a lot to do. And I think it's important to recognize that some of these are huge issues. Sometimes clinicians are like, oh, my gosh, what can I do about health insurance? What can I do about air pollution? But sure. At the end of the day, we enjoy a very sort of high social status in our society and a lot of influence. And I think if we partner with those other people to help modify that, it is a role where we can make, in conjunction with others, a meaningful impact to the overall health of this gentleman and people like him.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that. It brings up another facet of population health, and that is bringing in community partners. Before we get into that, Tim, what would you add to that scenario?
I think what Tom gave is an excellent overview and summary. I guess with my business hat on, I would say we need to operationalize those approaches and techniques. We need to have tools, both communication tools, maybe scoring tools for identifying the high-risk individuals. In my previous job in Kingsport, we use the LACES score, where it's an acronym for length of stay, acuity of admission, comorbidities, ED visits, how many, and then social issues. And we use the score to help identify which patients needed higher levels of intervention for post-discharge coordination of care. The higher the score, the more likely it was that patient would be readmitted if we did not make the intervention. So I think there are some good techniques that need to be embedded in the operational workflow of case management, of the nursing staff, as you mentioned, the community organizations. From my work at the hospital in Kingsport, when we started on this, we had very little intelligence about all those community organizations and what they do, whether it's food service, housing service, help to get patients a follow-up visit who don't have insurance. Those things become very important techniques, because if our goal is, as Tom said, is good health and keep this patient from having to repeat, come back to the hospital, all of those elements have to be operationalized and put into a workflow so that before that gentleman leaves the hospital, you've connected him and his family with all of those community organizations to help him achieve good health and stay out of the hospital.
Sure. We need to be equipped as clinicians and health systems with appropriate databases of information. You use the word operationalize several times, and it's difficult to improve things if we're not measuring them. But to a clinician, it sounds like measuring all that information, operationalizing these things, usually leads to more clicks in an electronic medical record system for each clinician. So that gives me some heartburn, but we are currently adapting a new electronic medical record in our system, and it can be quite exhausting, as you know, and overwhelming. So obstacles. What obstacles, Tim, do you see in our ability to set appropriate metrics and accurately measure them for the desired outcome?
It's an excellent question and one that I could probably talk too long on, but the number one concern I have as an obstacle is that we are unfortunately fixated on work RVUs and CPT codes. I think that gets in the way of doing the best thing for patients, and I actually would encourage all physician leaders, all service line leaders to rethink, how do we want to define the performance of cardiovascular specialists? Are we going to limit that to production of a CPT code and worker review, or do we need to have a metric that really broadens the perspective of performance and the impact on health? So that's number one. Number two, I think we need to develop specific quality measures that incorporate health outcomes over time and patient-reported outcomes, not just what happens inside the episode of care. And on that point of kind of rethinking measures, I would encourage the audience to read an article that I found very helpful. The name of the article is We Should Measure What Matters in Bundled Payment Programs. It's published in the Annals of Internal Medicine, April 2018. It's got a really keen insight into this whole issue of measurement, and it talks about cost measurement. And I think that's the other thing I would add to this discussion is when you look at performance and the impact we can have on closing gaps, part of what that's going to do over time, I believe firmly, is it will actually lower the cost of care. Because if we have better coordination and connect patients with community resources to address social, economic, and other needs, I think that will keep those patients healthier and out of the hospital where the high costs are being driven. So I think we need to have good cost data inside of our evaluation of how well we're doing on managing health. We should be managing health over a time horizon, and the marker of how well we're doing is both a quality outcome health index and cost. So I think this requires us to really think about how we classify and code patients using, you know, our ICD-10 and CPT code. And we need to move beyond that and start thinking in a more broad fashion about the population health overall, not just the episode of care.
Great. Well, you're talking our language. I appreciate that. And we can certainly provide a link to that article on the website. That'll be helpful. Tom, you've done a lot of research in this area. What advice can you offer, perhaps for low-hanging fruit, that your research has demonstrated?
Well, I certainly think there's value in doing some of the health services research that a lot of health systems have participated in already, but specifically focusing in on the patients and the populations that they serve and being data-driven, being empiric in how we doing. What are our heart failure patients receiving from a lifestyle and pharmacologic point of view that could help optimize their outcomes? And what kind of variability are we seeing? Are we seeing that patients in a particular clinic or part of our health system or through a particular provider aren't getting optimal care? Can we focus on those first? So I think that's one. But that actually only characterizes what happens in the healthcare system. And like I said earlier, that is only one of many inputs into a patient's overall health. And unfortunately, we're very early on in even having the data, let alone the analyses of what those other inputs are. So we are often blind to what a patient is doing at home. We have very crude ways of measuring medication adherence or behavior patterns. We are largely blind to genetic predisposition, recognizing that's an evolving science. We often have very, very little insight, in fact, often none, about workplace or environmental exposures or social relationships or other things that are also impacting those health outcomes. So the first is to start to gather those. And I think as we move into a world where more and more data is being collected, often used just to market things to us, potentially we could repurpose that data for a little bit better goal, and that is helping us inform comprehensively the inputs that are affecting our patients' health and then being more targeted and effective, essentially, in helping them out. I also think the analysis portion, and Tim mentioned this with the LACE Plus score and other prediction tools, it allows us as clinicians, all of whom have limited time, to be strategic in who we reach out to. You know, there's going to be in any given panel that a clinician has, only a subset of those are going to need active outreach to help them with medication adherence, or they're struggling with fluid overload, or struggling with some social determinant. And if I can come into a clinic or come into my inpatient ward and have an analysis that says, hey, focus on these 10 people first because they really need the assistance you can provide and everybody else looks pretty good, we'll keep an eye on them, then I think you're really starting to get smart, not only from an effectiveness point of view, but to one of Tim's other points, now you're getting cost effective too.
Great. Now, that covers a lot of ground. You know, in Lynchburg, Virginia, it's a moderate-sized town and it has an excellent healthcare community. the Lynchburg Academy of Medicine comes to mind as an organization that's been around for over 100 years and is very community-minded, but we have a regular difficulty knowing of everything that goes on in the community and having a collaborative effort to be able to bring all those resources together. It sounds like a great part of making population health work is to enlist these community members to participate and make sure that we're not all spinning our wheels and all doing the same thing, but we can align our efforts to really focus on goals that will make a difference. What advice can you offer to enlist community members to participate in these activities, or what community members might be most helpful in reaching out to and finding partnerships?
I'm happy to tell you a little bit about our experience here in St. Louis. Our health system is particularly focused on vulnerable populations here, which largely just mean folks that are poor, poor in a variety of ways, poor in money, poor in resource, poor in social support, and then not surprisingly poor in health outcomes. So how do we, as a nonprofit and a mission-driven organization, how do we think about helping that population? And, you know, much like there are different levels of inputs that go into somebody's health outcome, there are going to be different levels of interventions. So, for example, at the individual level, we find that a lot of these folks don't have optimal health care access. You know, they may come into the hospital, and that's fine. But once they're discharged, they really don't have clinics near them. Maybe they don't have transportation to get there if they do. Just a variety of problems with access to the actual health care delivery. So we've had programs starting to explore things like mobile sites of care where we go to them. So we have screening fairs are an easy example, but we started to move to mobile buses. They go to high-need communities and are there for a period of time to allow people to come to them without encountering some of the access issues or other mobile opportunities like that. This is also potentially a role for virtual health options. So that's at the individual level. At the group level, we're thinking, to your point, Evan, about community resource engagement. So we have a large and strong African-American community here in St. Louis. We've seen some really interesting models in other parts of the country where that community in particular, the men anyway, gravitate around barbershops, and that they trained, I think it was in Los Angeles, they trained barbers on how to measure blood pressure, and then if it was elevated, sort of give their clients some information about, hey, this is a bad deal, can lead to bad health. What do you think about getting connected to the healthcare system to get it under control? We're also training community health workers that can be navigators. They're often community members who live very close to and live in the same environment as our patients. And they are specially trained to sort of assess patients, their social needs that might be affecting their health, and then connect them to resources in the community to help them out. And then finally, at the broad state level, unfortunately, Missouri is one of the last states to not expand Medicaid. And we as a health system just recognize that is creating enormous adverse health outcomes. So we have been very active in the initiative to get that expansion on the ballot next year and ideally passed, because frankly, if they can't manage it financially, it's not going to happen.
Great. Well, one thing that I guess I'm seeing as a clinician is really viewing the delivery of healthcare through the patient's perspective and considering each facet of their life and how what we are providing for them, what we are recommending for them through their perspective can be quite impactful as we consider the community resource engagement that we are going to employ and what will be most accessible to them. More from an operational standpoint, Tim, our time is running short. I wonder if you could kind of finish us off from an ACC standpoint. What does the future hold for the ACC with regard to population health, and in what ways is the college continuing to collaborate with other partners to fulfill the quadruple aim?
Sure. So I think this whole discussion kind of reminds me of the ACC's mission statement, which should be our true north, that is to transform cardiovascular care and improve heart health. And I always tap into that word transform because it means to me that we really want to reshape in a significant way, that there are big gaps by certain populations of individuals that we need to fill. So as part of our effort, one of the big things we're doing right now, and it's part of our strategic plan, is investing in our diversity and inclusion efforts. We know there are disparities in care, there are inequities in care by subpopulations, and the ACC, being a leader for cardiovascular care worldwide, we're investing and taking the lead to engage other societies, engage all the key stakeholders around how do we address these gaps in care by also making sure that cardiology is represented by underrepresented groups and by women in cardiology, because we know that part of the secret to improving population health is to make sure that the clinicians caring for those populations can identify with those populations. Big element. Just a couple more to tick through. We're investing in NCDR, our registries, to expand those to include cost data, because I think our clinicians and health systems, hospitals need to see how they're performing on the total cost of care, external cost. We're working through John Rumsfeld. Dr. Rumsfeld's leading our innovations efforts. He is identifying tools, precision analytics, digital health solutions that can be embedded in the workflow to help with identifying and then managing those patients and connecting to remote monitoring and patients who are at home or in the workplace to make sure that our care models incorporate, no matter where the patient is, they're under our care. We're engaging with health systems and big CV group practices to equip them with the ability to develop the operational wherewithal to take on population health and bundled payments. We're also engaging with CMS and commercial payers because we need to make sure the commercial payers reward this activity. We believe in it. It's part of our mission. I think it's the moral imperative, but it's also important for CMS and the payers to pay us, to properly compensate us for our ability to manage these populations and reduce cost. And then last, I think we need to figure out a way to connect cardiovascular specialty care in population health with primary care physicians and other physicians under a co-management arrangement. We can't look at this as just a silo. It needs to be integrated across the care continuum.
Perfect. Well, that gives us a great foundation. I know I've learned a lot today and have a lot to digest myself, and I think this will be a valuable foundation for many of our listeners as we consider our roles in advancing population health. So again, I want to thank Dr. Tom Maddox out of Washington University and Mr. Tim Atterbury from the ACC for joining us today. Thank you all for joining us for this session of Practice Makes Perfect, and we look forward to our next discussion.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This is Dr. Allison Bailey, FACC. Thanks for joining us today, and please be sure to join us online at acc.org or on iTunes and Google Play to subscribe to Practice Made Perfect. We hope you'll join us next time as we continue our series and keep the conversation going on our new online community, Member Hub, to discuss these topics and any top-of-mind practice issues. Catch you next time to discuss more on how practice really does make perfect.